Welcome to the June 30th service of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Blacksburg, Virginia. The service today is led by our settled minister, Reverend Pam Phillips, and the title of her sermon is The Demands of Beauty. The podcast begins with a reading, read by Worship Associate Stephen Henninger.
Today's reading is by Baron Wormser, an American poet, and is titled Opinion. Halfway to work, and Merriman has already told me what he thinks about the balanced budget, the Mets' lack of starting pitching, the dangers of displaced Soviet nuclear engineers, soy products, and diesel cars. I look out the window and hope I'll see a swan. I hear they're bad-tempered, but I love their necks and how they glide along so sovereignly. I never take the time to drive to a pond and spend an hour watching the swans. What would happen if I heeded the admonitions of beauty? When I look over at Merriman, he's telling Driscoll that the president doesn't know what he's doing with China. China, I say out loud but softly. I go back to the window. It started snowing.
I just want to let you know, if it seems too political, that the president in the poem is George W. Bush. But as someone wrote, no presidents know what to do with China. It's true. Did Nixon? I don't know. Ping pong diplomacy. I was hearing about that yesterday. But back to the point. What would happen if I heeded the admonitions of beauty? The rest of the poem we chose for the reading doesn't seem to have much to do with our theme today. What does beauty demand of us? But that one line really is at the core. What would happen if I heeded the admonitions of beauty? What are the admonitions of beauty? What does beauty call us to think, to do, to be? But once we stumbled on this poem, Stephen and I agreed that it was worth reading aloud because it resonates with our own experiences and the place beauty sometimes occupies in our lives. The narrative of the poem contrasts the mundane and worldly topics of conversation with his companions on the way to work. International and domestic politics, diesel cars and soy products, and the Mets. With his own internal monologue, his hope to see a swan, thinking of the elegance of their necks, and how they glide across the water. The narrator recognizes and reminds us that so much of our lives are filled with opinions about worldly matters that perhaps really don't matter, and wonders what would happen if we heeded the admonitions of beauty. In his case, the admonition would prompt him to take a drive to a pond or a lake and watch the swans. A worthy way to spend his time, I'm guessing. It would probably help him maintain his balance, help him keep his mind on what's important in his life, and probably help him to respond to what I'm guessing he thinks are trivial and banal statements from his traveling companions, with more patience and equanimity. Perhaps he'd even try to inject a little talk of beauty or other more profound matters into their daily conversations. If you were to heed the admonitions of beauty, what would you do? Where would you go? How would you invest and spend one of the most valuable of all commodities? Your time. I'm guessing you, like the narrator in the poem, might seek more beauty by visiting a place of natural beauty, or exploring an art gallery or museum, or reading a novel, or a book of poetry. Or perhaps you might create beauty, painting or sewing or sculpting or writing or singing or playing. Beauty begetting beauty. But as I was considering what we might explore during the month of June, our time of exploring what it means to be a people of beauty, I was encouraged to think that perhaps it could be more. That beauty could call us not just to enjoy it and appreciate it, not just to create it, but something more. And my encouragement came from references to a book by Elaine Scarry titled On Beauty and Being Just, which was referenced by Reverend Mary Catherine Morn, author of our opening words, a minister I've admired ever since I heard her preach at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Fairfax, and who now heads up the UU Service Committee, an organization that advances human rights and social justice around the world, partnering with those who confront unjust power structures and mobilizing to challenge oppressive policies. Mary Catherine Morn knows about working for justice. And she writes of Elaine Scarry's argument. She contends that when we are apprehended by beauty, we are changed. We know this well. We know the way our breath deepens, our gaze fixes, our mind clears, and our heart opens. This is what beauty does. She goes so far as to say, beauty brings us to life. It awakens us. This should be easy, but often it is not. That is because beauty does more than awaken us. It also admonishes us. It demands something. It changes things. There's that word again, admonishes. Beauty admonishes, demands, changes things. And Reverend Morn's words led us to the poem that Stephen read, inviting us to heed the admonitions of beauty. And so, I dutifully read Elaine Scarry's book. It's not very long, but it's very academic, which is not surprising as she is the Walter M. Cabot Professor of Aesthetics and the General Theory of Value at Yale University. And I enjoyed following the development of her arguments through citations of Plato and Socrates, Dante and Dickinson, Simone Weil and Iris Murdoch. And I also learned quite a bit about the beauty of palm trees and their role in the paintings of Matisse. Any Matisse lovers here? There are palm trees even where there are no palm trees. And it's so funny because when she talks about how we know what is beautiful or not, she says she made a mistake early on. She said she didn't think palm trees were beautiful, but apparently Matisse changed that for her. I was especially intrigued by her notion that when we behold beauty, it helps to decenter ourselves. She writes, "We find we are standing in a different relation to the world than we were a moment before. It's not that we cease to stand at the center of the world, for we never stood there. It is that we cease to stand at the center of our own world. We willingly cede our ground to the thing that stands before us." This radical decentering is part of what makes it possible for us to notice not only more beauty, but also injustice. And to desire to preserve not only beauty, but also to create justice. I'm not doing her argument justice, but in the end, for me, that doesn't really matter. Because as I read her treatise, I felt much like the narrator in our reading today, the poem, Opinions. Because what I was seeking was not an academic treatise on how beauty and justice have etymological and philosophical connections. What I was seeking was something far more concrete, something that said that seeking, appreciating, or creating beauty could help us to create more justice. My need for that kind of instruction book and not philosophy was created by the realities of our world. By the photograph of a father and daughter who died as they tried to make their way from violence and poverty to what they hoped would be safety and opportunity. By the reports of unsanitary and unsafe conditions in detention centers where children had been separated from their families. I wanted and needed some promise that if we were a people of beauty, we could help effect the change that we want to see in the world. And as edifying as Professor Scarry's work was, as intellectually challenging and intriguing, I was not convinced that beauty changes us enough to work for justice. At least one critic of her work, Todd Gitlin, likewise admits, "I would love to be persuaded by her main arguments, but I am not." Scarry is struck by the parallels between love of beauty and love of justice, but parallels are not causes. And history shows how easy it is to sever these two ideals. Gitlin goes on to refute her arguments by citing an infamous art lover who was definitely not moved to work for justice. He writes, "In the extreme case, as George Steiner taught us, Germans were fully capable of slaughtering in the afternoon and loving Mozart at night. On his single day of conquistadorial pride in Paris, June 28, 1940, Hitler devoted 3 hours to an art tour, including a visit to the opera, where, according to Nazi leader Albert Speer, he went into ecstasies about its beauty. Afterward, Hitler said, "Wasn't Paris beautiful? Berlin must be made far more beautiful." Actually, I admit I was predisposed to be disappointed by Scarry's work. When I started to think about my own experiences with beauty and how or whether it has called me to action, I was disappointed not just with the power of beauty, but with myself. Think about one of our greatest sources of beauty, especially here in the New River Valley, the natural world. But as much as everyone claims to appreciate the beauty of nature, that beauty has not moved us to do what we must to preserve and protect it. Our opening hymn, "For the Earth Forever Turning," is one that I love, both for its sweeping melody, but also its reminder of the earth earth's beauty and how it moves us. For the earth forever turning, for the skies, for every sea, for the mountains, hills, and pastures in their silent majesty. For the stars, for all the heavens, for the sun, for rain and thunder, for the season's harmony, for our lives, for all creation, sing we our joyful song of peace. The beauty of the earth does move us, and not just to sing a joyful peace, song of peace. Think about the last time you were moved by the beauty of nature. Where were you? What did you see? How did it make you feel? What did it make you do? Tell me later. When you saw that sunset, that landscape, that intricate plant or creature, did your breath deepen? Your gaze fix? Your mind clear and your heart open? I'm wondering if, like me, you felt the need to share it by calling to a partner or a child or a friend to come and see what you were seeing. Yes? Last night, my husband came home and strongly encouraged me to go outside so that I could see the night sky and the fireflies twinkling in the trees around our house. Anyone else see that last night? Yeah. For a person who grew up in Oregon and didn't see her first firefly until she was 21, it is still a miracle. And it was beautiful. Or perhaps you pulled out your phone to take a photograph and then sent it to someone or posted it on social media. Anyone take a picture of beautiful nature recently? I know you did. I saw it on Facebook. There is something about beauty that begs us to share it and to preserve it somehow. If you're an artist or a poet, perhaps you preserved it by recreating it in images or words. We need only look around this room to see some of the recreations of natural beauty. This one there. And those of you who were at the poetry service heard celebrations of beauty written by members of UUC. Those are all logical and even laudatory responses to beauty. But I want our being a people of beauty to lead us to being people of justice. Is that too much to ask? At General Assembly, I heard a sermon preached by the Reverend Lindy Ramsden, who is now the Director of Partnership and Emerging Programs at Star King School for the Ministry. Some of you may remember her speaking from this pulpit at the installation of Reverend Dara. I actually found a picture of Lindy and Jamie and I from that day. She spoke at GA to the sense of urgency that we should be feeling over the climate crisis, of the need to prepare ministers to care for congregations who are suffering the effects of climate change. I think of those who live in the path of hurricanes and floods and wildfires. She spoke to the reality that those who are most impacted by the effects of climate change are least responsible for it and bear the greatest hardships. The climate crisis is a justice issue. And then I came home to Blacksburg and attended a meeting of the environmental justice team here at UUC. These are folks who have been working for the past 2 years to help this congregation commit more to environmental justice. They've done a lot. Surveying the congregation with our drops of water during the water communion 2 years ago, sponsoring the monthly environmental justice films, providing a library of resources, coming up with a plan to finance and install solar panels on our roof, and encouraging local restaurants to give out plastic straws, and asking us all to make promises to Mother Earth with our promise tree back there. All of their work is aimed at getting our green sanctuary status renewed. And individuals in this congregation have also committed time and energy to opposing the Mountain Valley Pipeline and supporting the Citizens Climate Change Lobby. But I have to admit that the theme of that meeting on Thursday evening was really whether or not this congregation as a whole was committed to environmental justice. A few people can't do all that work. So we'll be convening an environmental summit on the last Sunday in August, right after our water communion, to see how and if environmental justice can move forward at UUC. I hope all of you will attend. In the meantime, we can do more to educate ourselves by attending a lecture at Blacksburg Presbyterian Church on July 11th at 7 p.m., where Dr. Carl Zipper, who taught environmental science to graduate and undergraduate students at Virginia Tech for 28 years, will be presenting an illustrated presentation on climate change science and policy. Which is all to say that it clearly takes more than beauty to move us toward justice. We, like so many others, need more than the deepened breath, the fixed gaze, the cleared mind, and the opened heart that beauty evokes to move beyond the appreciation of beauty to concrete actions toward justice. We need proof. We are Unitarian Universalists. We use our heads more than our hearts. But I want to reject that stereotype. I want us to be moved by our hearts. So while I encourage us to look for that proof, we need to let ourselves be moved by beauty. To be moved by the memory of those times when our heart deepened, our gaze fixed, our mind cleared, and our hearts opened. And I also think we have to look for beauty in different places. In the faces of those little brown children at our border. And we must act. On July 12th, there will be an action downtown, Lights of for Liberty. Lights for Liberty. All across this nation, there are people who will be gathering to protest the actions of our government. Because as much as we say, that's not what I believe, that's not what I think should happen, this is happening in our names. And if we don't speak up, we are complicit. So find the beauty, find the courage in the faces of those children. Even while we need our rational minds to tell us what to do, we can take encouragement from our hearts. As the environmental pioneer Rachel Carson wrote, those who contemplate the beauty of the earth find reserves of strength that will endure as long as life lasts. Contemplate the beauty to get the sources of strength. Whether or not beauty leads us to work for justice, let us find reserves of strength from our appreciation of it to help us do what we must do. Let us heed the admonitions of beauty to seek it out, to preserve it, to recreate it, not just to help us become people of beauty, but also people of justice.